All right. Hello and welcome to the Conjecturing a Horror-ish podcast. With me is Laura.
Hello.
And Greg.
Hey, what's up?
And I'm your host, Rob. That's going to be horrible to edit, Greg. I feel like that's going to not be any great sound at all.
Well, that's your key, just to not edit it at all. Just let it go. Mm-hmm.
I'll do my best. So how you guys all doing tonight?
Fantastic.
Doing good.
We're all recovering from viewing the movie this week. You know, I think Laura is regretting her choice a little bit, even though she said she wanted to see it just to see it. But I don't know if she's happy with it now.
I will talk about it soon. Mm-hmm. Soon enough.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We're actually wearing things today again. This is kind of the theme we're going with. I just have like a kind of tropical flory shirt on, a floral shirt that I'm wearing. Laura went all out and she has a whole like flowery head. What is it called? Like a headpiece, a crown? What do you call it?
Flower crown. Yes.
Flower crown. Wow. So she
looks like so legit too.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, you look like the May Queen. You look like you won the dance.
Okay, I'll take it as long as that's not me in the burning shed, then I'm good.
Yeah, we were joking before we started recording that we were waiting to see what Greg was wearing. We were thinking Greg might be wearing some type of bear costume.
Flower shirt made a comeback.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I also have a little floral koozie for my cup.
Yeah, my only other idea for the pod was just to be naked. Just to be naked on here. That was my other option, but I think I chose wisely by wearing a floral shirt. I think that was a good choice, you know?
You should have trusted your instincts on that one.
Yeah. let's get to everybody's favorite segment right now and see what we're all kind of like drinking tonight.
What's in the cups?
All right. So what are you drinking, Laura?
I have made what I call the Midsommar May Queen lemonade.
Oh.
And this honestly is one of the best drinks I've ever made. It's freaking delicious. You'll see by the color, actually you can't really tell over Zoom, but it doesn't look like regular lemonade. It looks a little darker. Not from that scene, not what you're thinking, but what I did was I infused vodka for 1 hour with tea leaves.
Wow.
And it turned the vodka brown. And so it's basically a sparkling lemonade mixed with my tea infused vodka. And it is seriously, it's delicious. I'm going to put the recipe up on our Instagram account.
That is a good one.
Oh, it's so good. I'm going to chug this down so fast, you guys. Oh, man.
Nice.
Yeah. So what are you drinking, Greg?
I tried to get like a lemonade or tea or something Swedish. That totally failed. But Lindsay did make me this really nice margarita that kind of looks like it's the color of Laura's drink. And it's pretty good. It's got a really good mixer, and it's called Mixis de May Tamarindo. So, ooh. And it's really good. I also bought a bunch of my floral type essential oils and I sprinkled them all over. So I feel like I'm in an open meadow or a garden or something. So I'm like really feeling it.
Nice. I like it. We all have a theme going right now because I'm drinking some like lemongrass tea. You know, I definitely feel like I needed to calm down from watching this movie and relax a bit and not be on edge. So I decided not to go with a little bit of alcohol tonight. Just go with some lemongrass tea, you know, calm down, just relax a bit and kind of like chill out.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yep. Yeah.
We need to create a database of all of the drinks that we've had.
I think
a lot of the ones that we've been mixing up have just been like knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. They hit. Yeah.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They fuck. Yeah.
They fuck.
Dang. That's a good callback to like. 10 episodes.
Throwback.
That's like 10 episodes ago. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Never too late to bring it back.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's accurate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's get to like a little bit of updates here. Kind of like where we do like, you know, comments, questions, previous show stuff. I don't really think we got any comments, questions as far as any reviews go. I know one thing Laura's starting to do now, her and Greg, you guys are doing like memes for Twitter and stuff like that. You guys are going to start working on putting those out there.
Yes.
I think Greg and Laura might be the masters at this from what I've seen so far, you know?
It's all Greg.
It's all from Greg's brain.
It really just comes from our show notes. I feel like whenever we watch these movies, we have a collection of notes, and like half of it doesn't make it into the pod. It's just random stuff that we're thinking when we watch the movie. So sometimes I like to hear what you guys say, and I figure like I just have a visual about it sometimes. So, you know, why not make it into a jokey meme?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the only other update I have is that we now officially have like a YouTube channel. So that's one thing I worked on this past week, was just kind of setting up the YouTube channel. It's no visuals for now. We haven't done anything visual related, but all the episodes are on there, and every new episode will get posted there with just the audio. But I don't know, maybe in the future we'll post something, maybe, you know, because technically we are recording this visually. We are recording it. I do have audio. I do have visual files, you know, so going forward, we'll see what we do. But for now, it is just all audio on there. But we'll see what happens in the future. So if anybody wants to go there to YouTube and subscribe,
I feel like Rob,
go for it.
Our lives are in your hands. You're like the
puppet.
We cannot cross you any which way. You have audio, video of us doing the most damning things.
Yeah,
that's true. And that's not even counting all the shit I cut out, you know? All that bad stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
So do you guys got anything else to talk about from Pet Sematary from last week's episode?
How's your cat doing, Laura?
Oh, she's awesome. She is not, you know, brought back from the dead evil cat. She is just the sweetest. Thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. How's your kid doing, Greg?
I've built four fences between our front door and just the sidewalk, not even the street, you know.
Nice, nice.
Has he put on like a top hat and like found a cane and walked around?
Oh, he's definitely a big pimpin' in the house, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's get to the actual movie. Not really a reveal. You know, we have a reveal in the docket, but that's because we used to not reveal it at the end of every episode. But we're doing 2019's Midsommar this week, hence the floral and the jokes about being naked and a bear. So, well, I guess it could fit into other movies, I guess, you know? So, Laura, why did you choose this movie?
Well, chose it really because I was looking for an excuse to watch this movie. And I think, as I mentioned last week, June 24th is the midsummer event in Sweden this year. And I think the official day for it worldwide is June 21st. So right around now. But it was just an excuse. I really wanted to watch this movie because I watched his first film, Hereditary. And that movie scared the shit out of me. I mean, really fucked up. And I knew this one was going to be pretty bad too. And I just, you know, I thought the other one was so scary that I had to see this one, but I was nervous. So I needed this pod. I needed that excuse to watch it, cause I don't know if I would have done it otherwise.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad, you know, there's more things coming out of this other than just like, you know, stupid jokes and games and, you know, sometimes good reviews, you know?
Of course.
I mean, because I definitely, of course, never saw this. Greg, right? None of us saw this movie, right, Greg?
Mm-mm.
Right. Oh, so we all have fresh eyes. We're all looking at it now. Okay. So it should be definitely a good review when we're all very, you know, fresh take, you know, not second scenes or anything like that. So that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. So yeah, before we actually get to more of the movie, let's do the horror-ish segment of the week. This week we got... This week we got a question. You know, I finally was able to think of a question. I'm tired of doing games. I'm tired of spending my whole weekend researching and coming up with things. So we got a question this week. This question definitely pertains to this movie, Midsommar, which is, like you said, Laura, which is, what is it? What would you call it?
So the Midsummer Festival is actually celebrated worldwide. It's even celebrated here with like the maypoles and dancing, but I think some countries such as Sweden, you know, it's a little bit bigger there. But you know, unlike this movie, which has its fair share of like pagan rituals, that's not how it is anywhere. I mean, it's like a big feast where everyone drinks and dances and eats and has fun. It's not supposed to be scary.
Yeah. So definitely that pertains to the question I came up with this week, which I sent it to these guys early because I wanted them really to think about their answers for this and why. I didn't want to put them on the spot because we'd probably get some stupid generic, be like, oh, you know, a really lame answer. So...
Damn.
But the question I came up with is, what other world festival would you choose to make a great horror movie? So what other world festival would you choose that would make a good horror movie and why, of course? So who wants to go first? Who did the great research? Who wants to... both of them, I don't know how they did this, but on a computer screen, they looked at each other. I don't know how they did that, but yeah.
I'll jump off the cliff first on this one. It reminded me of one time I had to go to New Mexico for work one time, and it was in like Southwest Albuquerque or somewhere. And when I went there, they were doing this thing called the Albuquerque Balloon Festival, they have these giant hot air balloons and they set off all at once into the sky. It's like the most amazing looking thing. And that's what I thought of. I thought it'd be kind of cool to have a... I think one of the beautiful things about this movie is to take something like nice and pretty and, you know, calm and peaceful, like Laura said, the actual celebration is, and turns it into something haunting and scary. So I thought, man, like, imagine having all these bright balloons in the air, everyone's having a good time, everyone's having a party, and then, I don't know, like, maybe the balloon operator on one balloon, like, has a heart attack or somebody or something, and they go drifting off into somewhere, and they don't know how to get out of the balloon. It's almost like hot air balloon version of Frozen or something, you know, and their cell phones don't work or something. Mm. Anyway, I thought that would be, that's my idea. It's kind of a ripoff of Frozen, but, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what about you, Laura? What did you come up with?
I don't know if you guys have seen photos of this. I totally have and forgot about it until I did my very minimal research right before we hopped on this call. But it's the La Tomatina event in Spain. Have you guys seen photos of that where everyone is just head to toe drenched in red and they're swimming in pools of tomatoes? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the pictures are incredible. I've actually seen... a horror movie previously have this scene in it. And even though nothing scary was happening, just the images of people's skin dyed red from the tomatoes. I mean, mm-hmm. everything, their clothes, their skin, their hair. It was kind of a horrifying scene. And I'm like, that would be such an easy horror movie festival because there could just be so much anarchy happening and all these gruesome murders. And it's just red. It's mm-hmm. red everywhere. So I thought that would be kind of cool.
Nice.
No, that's a great idea. Yeah. That's one of the ones I had on my list too, because like you said, just the visual alone looks so much like gore and blood that I think it'd be such mm-hmm. a great transition to make it a horror, you know? That was a good one. Yeah. One of the ones that I looked up that I was like, this is already fucked up. And I think it would be pretty crazy. It'd be an easy transition for a horror movie. It's called Krampusnacht, and this is from Central Europe. And this is so Krampusnacht is Krampus night, and this occurs on December 5th, the night before the feast of Saint Nicholas. And it says, while Santa appears in the vestments of a bishop and doles out gifts for the good little girls and boys, the horny, literally and figuratively, devil presents the bad ones with coal and or swats them with bundles of birch branches. So this is like Krampus night. So this is like a fucked up, you know, we already know, like, we've already seen there's movies about Krampus and pretty much he's an evil Santa and this and that. So this is a pretty easy transition to do kind of similar to the Midsommar. You know, people are going to be going on vacation. They want to do something different. They're going to mm-hmm. Krampusnacht. You know, they want to come do that for Christmas. And, you know, and then they realize that, you know, Krampus is real and he comes out and he's horny and he hits him with branches. Yeah. Yeah. So let's, let's transition now to the movie here. Let's get into the movie. We did our question. We got good answers mostly. Let's get to the movie. So now it's time to piss on the tree. So let's piss on the tree and get to the movie right now.
Okay, I gave you so many ideas. I did not give you that one.
No, how you did. I told you. I you know, just so everybody knows right now, Laura's taking over writing the show dockets every week. I was doing it in the first like 10 weeks and Laura's kind of taken over these past couple of weeks. And she usually gives me some suggestions for the transitions and the 1 to 5 rating. But I'm always trying to find something different because it's just because I want her to be surprised. And yeah, Pissed on the Tree was one I thought would be pretty funny. And her reaction, that definitely was great. Oh man. All right. There's no transition here. So let's just go to the movie. Okay. All right. So we're doing Midsommar, 2019, director is Ari Aster. Like Laura talked about, he did Hereditary. This movie's budget was only $9 million, which I was surprised. That seems low, but I guess there's no effects in it. It's just like they literally had to build this area and that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
Yeah, box office, it made $46.9 million, so a good return there, good box office. Laura, do you want to get into some interesting facts you found about the movie?
Yes. So the first fact I wanted to share is that it was not filmed in Sweden. It was actually filmed in Budapest, which I thought was really cool. Another thing that Rob already mentioned, everything you see in that village, the Harga, was hand-built for this set. And then the only other thing to know is that originally this was rated NC-17, which I understand. And I wish I knew why it went down to an R.
Because they must have cut something to make it go down. They cut something from the original screener they sent.
Well, actually, I just thought of another thing that I read. This movie was originally like 3.5 hours long, and he cut an hour out. Because it's like a 2-hour, 20-minute movie.
Like 2.5 hours, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Do you have a little bit, Laura, about the director's reason for making the movie?
Yes, yes. So actually, this isn't a surprise, but this is a breakup movie. And the director mentions that he actually was dealing with the breakup when he wrote this. And so that's what inspired him. And so a quote that I wanted to read, he said he created this breakup movie and he was having fun with cliches and tropes that are inherent to two different genres, doing something that's simultaneously absurdist and nakedly vulnerable. And I was like, absolutely. Yeah. Just
Yeah, if this is a breakup movie, it is the ultimate breakup movie.
Yeah, I'll say.
The way it ends is like the ultimate breakup. I don't think you can break up with somebody more than what happened at the end of this movie.
It's good to know. See, this quote is important for me because I think if I hadn't known why he made this movie and what he was thinking, I don't know what I would have thought about it. So it's good to know that that's where he was going with it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. As far as cast goes, this is definitely I recognized almost everybody in this movie, but I couldn't really like be like, oh, they're from this. Nothing was like a hit, you know. Definitely the guy Chidi from Good Place, of course.
Yeah.
The main girl in this movie, I only know her from Fighting with My Family, the wrestling movie with The Rock. I didn't realize it was her until I looked it up, and I'm like, oh wow, that's her. But and the other guys, like the other people, the Jack Rayner and Will Porter, like they look familiar. And I know I've seen them in multiple things, but I couldn't really say what it was. So I thought that was kind of cool to have. I wouldn't say unknowns, but definitely people that, you know, you don't distinguishly recognize and it might pull you out of the movie.
Yeah. And then a ton of actual Swedish actors. I mean, if you look up who they are and what they've been in, it's hardly anything. And they're all like from Sweden. So I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Do you want to give the synopsis, Laura?
Yes. So we have our main character, Danny. She is completely traumatized by, unfortunately, her sister and parents just passed away in a very tragic way. And she has a boyfriend, Christian, and they're already on the verge of breaking up before this tragedy. And now that this has happened to her, he feels like he needs to kind of stay with her. And he was planning a trip with some friends to Sweden to attend the Midsommar Festival. And he ends up inviting her along. And as the movie goes on, you quickly realize that the festival is celebrating ideas by like an ancient pagan cult with extremely violent and disturbing rituals.
Yes.
That's it. That's all she wrote.
That's true. Yeah, so let's dive into the movie here a bit. Man, I don't even know where to start, to be honest with you.
I know. I'm so confused.
Yeah, I mean, let's definitely talk about just the opening of this movie and the way it just like sets you up to be like, what the hell, you know, like the I mean, definitely might be one of the most grim openings I've seen in a movie in a very long time, you know. I mean, we talked about in our Mama episode that Mama's opening was very like artful and very creative. This opening was just fucking demented. It was, I mean, it's a horrific real life thing that happens, of course, out there to people. And, you know, and bipolar is not a joke. And of course, you know, murder suicides aren't a joke, but having to watch it is like, holy crap. It just sets you right away on this journey in this movie of, you know, uncomfortableness and just being on edge the whole time. Because if that's how a movie starts, then you're just like, how's it going to end?
Yeah.
I mean, do one of you guys kind of want to wrap up what the opening is, really?
Yeah, for me, you start off the movie and you get a little bit of Danny. And you find out right out the gates that she's very needy. And you find out she's very insecure. Her sister has been leaving her scary emails. And it feels like her only rock are her parents. And you get that call and you see her leave a voicemail, but they're asleep so that they don't hear it. And then you go through two or three different scenes and you hear that, you know, she's already just a needy, like kind of dependent person. And then you revisit the scene where the parents are asleep and you find out they're actually not asleep, but they were actually killed in their sleep by her sister who was leaving those emails. So it's just the most horrific opening, like you said, Rob. It's just so grim. And then on top of all that, her boyfriend is like ready to break up with her and is kind of like done being so close to each other. And you just realize within a few minutes, this girl is in the worst possible place like a person can be. So it was just so scary to me. And then the whole time when you find out about all that, like the music, it's like these strings that go up and down. And something about music something about sirens actually, I think, creeped me out. Like those old air horn sirens that go like up and down and up and down and kind of like waves. The music during that whole time in this first scene was just like that. It sounded like a orchestral siren. And it just, that threw me so like off.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was my take.
Mm-hmm. So what did you want to say, Laura? Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys nailed it. I don't have anything else to add to this except just to say that of everything that I saw in this movie, the beginning to me was the scariest part.
Mm-hmm.
That was the worst for me.
Yeah, like I said, it's very jarring. It's very jarring. Yeah. And there's a lot of jarring stuff in this movie, yeah. But but the opening is pretty crazy. Yeah, pretty much after that, you know, we pretty much find out that the boyfriend Christian and his kind of group of a-holes want to, you know, definitely they want to take a trip and they want to go to Sweden. One of their, is it their roommate? What is it? Is it Pele or Pelle?
Pelle. Yeah. I think they just met him. They were all anthro majors. And I think they just met him at their school and he just, you know, became their friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he pretty much tells them, you know, this is what my village does and this is the festival we do and you guys should come, and they pretty much agree to go, and that's kind of gets us on the journey of this movie of going to this festival. Like I said, definitely all the friends, I couldn't tell. I wanted to get Laura's opinion. Are all the friends assholes?
Yeah, I kind of see it both ways. I mean, obviously, once you see the rest of the movie, I absolutely side with Danny. And then it gives context to that beginning. But I think going into it not knowing, just the fact that he's on the fence and that he's having these conversations with his friends and they're just like, dude, stop being on the fence. Just do it. That just shows that, like, I don't know. If he were really respectful, he would have broken up with her already. Seems like he was just stringing her along. You know, the cheaty character, he didn't really seem like an asshole to me. He just didn't seem like he cared. I mean, he was just out there to get his thesis. And then Mark, he was a fucking asshole, but, you know, gave the very few bits of comic relief. So,
yeah.
It's tough to say. I mean, like I said, ultimately, I side with her, but I didn't know where I stood in the very beginning. I couldn't decide.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're still meeting them and you're still like, okay, who are these guys?
Yeah.
And everything. Yeah. I guess as a summary, they're assholes, but in the beginning, you don't know yet. I definitely want to call out in the beginning of this movie, just, you know, Greg talked about the music. I want to call out the directing. I mean, such good directing, especially in the opening of this movie. I really loved the shots that they played with the mirrors.
Yes.
There was multiple shots in the beginning of this movie where they were shooting, you know, a shot through a mirror, whether it was a bathroom shot or while they're sitting in the living room and conversing, or there's a reason behind that. I don't know if Greg has a grave diggings about that, because I know his other one he had on The Shining was like, you know, every time Jack was in front of a mirror, he was lying. So I don't know if that's something that the director thought of a reason why to have the mirrors involved, or if it's just a cool shot. I don't know. But I liked it every time they did that shot. I thought it was very creative. The only other thing I wanted to call out in the beginning was the art in this movie is so meaningful. Whether it's, you know, once they get to the actual village, all the art on the walls, all the drawings. And I noticed two pictures in her room in the beginning that I was like, those have to be something. They're just, they were framed. So there was two pictures. One of the pictures in her, I think it was in her apartment, was a woman kind of being surrounded by a bunch of people and being praised. And that's one image that kind of, like, you know, you get to the end of this movie and you figure, like, that's definitely foreshadowing. And I guess the other image, which I thought was even crazier, was another woman kissing a bear, which I thought was, like, when I saw it, I'm like, that's too weird to not be there for a reason in her room. And so that's another image that, you know, later on in this movie you realize what's going on. So that's just, like I said, that's part of directing. I don't know if that's written in the script, I don't know if that's who wrote it, I don't know if that's set design. But whoever had control of, like, those little tiny things, fucking genius. Genius stuff like that. It was just so, I just wanted to call it out because it was so cool.
Yeah, I want to jump on the mirrors thing real quick, because you called it exactly as I was thinking about it in The Shining. And I thought in this movie, the way that they were showing it is anytime that you saw someone through a mirror, there was definitely awkward conversation going on, right? And I even had a note here, like you said, I before I knew who the director even was, I wrote down, who's directing these kids? Like, he's a genius. Like, oh, they did such a good job. It literally felt, and like Laura, you said in the beginning, he was going through a breakup or something while writing this movie. Now it makes sense, because their argument, Danny and Christian's argument, it sounded like I was just eavesdropping on an actual, like, I'm sure that dialogue has been said where, like, the guy's more kind of avoidant and she's more clingy and she just wants to resolve things and he's just, like, he thinks he's being antagonized. Like, the words that they use just seem so real to me. It was like a real argument, and I friggin' love that.
Yeah, what did you guys think of, we need to decide how to pronounce this guy's name. Is it Pele? Is it Pele? You know?
Well, he was not so secretly in love with her.
That's what I was going to ask, is what did you guys take his initial kind of meeting with her? I know he's met her before, I think, but in probably quickly. But when they have their little conversation on the couch and he's kind of like, you know, I'm really glad you're coming and this and that. And, you know, because before you know everything, I took it as like, oh, wow, finally somebody like gives a shit. Finally, you know, these other guys don't want her to go. They don't want her to be there. And this guy seems genuine and nice, just like, I'm sorry for what happened, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, in a way, not justifying anything that this community or this commune and this cult do. But he, I think knowing what she went through, and he went through something similar. You know, he mentions that his parents died by fire or burning, which you're like, oh, okay. Once the end of the movie hits, you're like, now I know how. I think that the grief that she felt, he could just see it. And like you said, with some of that imagery, like in her room foreshadowing, it's almost like she was meant to be there and she was meant to be that person. And he could see it. And so in a way, I mean, he was very helpful because, you know, he brought her there. I don't think he wished her any harm. That's not the vibe I got. And he just, based off of her grief and what she's gone through, he felt like she belonged there and she could have a real family there. I mean, he does say you could have a family here. So
once we get to kind of the end of this movie a bit, I have some theories that I pulled from the internet that we'll go through it, and it's pretty fucking crazy, you know.
Rob Diggings. I just wanted to piggyback though, you're right. Like the director's shots I thought were so fucking incredible. Like the scene where the camera is going upside down to watch them driving like through these unknown roads, like where are they going in Sweden? Also the scenes where she, you know, goes into a bathroom at her friend's apartment and the next thing she's also in a bathroom on the airplane, like scenes like that. Mm-hmm. And just the acting, her acting specifically. I mean, I almost don't care what you think about this movie. I almost don't even care what I thought about it once it was over. But just you have to give credit for that acting. Yeah. I think this is some of the best acting we've seen so far.
Oh, I agree. Number one on our list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, definitely like you just talked about the upside down shot when they're driving into the actual commune was just so fucking great. Such a great creative shot, you know. Yeah. I mean, you can look into symbolism with that of, you know, being like, you know, talking about change or, you know, opposites or, you know, altered reality or whatever you want to talk about, you know, just being like, we're going somewhere different. This is mm-hmm. not somewhere normal, you know.
Yeah.
And just the reason of why that shot tilted like that. I thought that was really mm-hmm. fucking cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, pretty much, yeah, after they get to the actual commune, they get to the place, you know, everything seems chill. Everybody seems very loving, you know. There's a lot of mm-hmm. drugs everywhere. Seems like everybody's drugged.
They love their drugs, you know?
mm-hmm.
I am curious. I need to do some research. I don't know if you guys did any of this kind of research, but I'm curious to know what people in Sweden like thought of this movie. Could it have either yeah. A, brought a bunch of people who like actually wanted to go to the festival after this movie, knowing like, oh, we know it's not going to be like that, but it kind of gave it exposure? Or are they kind of like, what the fuck? That's not what we do. kind of offended.
I bet you it's the latter. I bet you they were like, you disrespected such a beautiful custom of ours. And that's just what I mean, just look at how beautiful it ought to be. And you know that it is. Where they've taken it. I don't know. Maybe they're not a culture that's easily offended, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, pretty much after that, you get into, I guess, the commune, really introducing the commune and what everything is. And you get a little bit of backstory about, you know, kind of what they do and why they do it. And
I feel like we need to, I think we just need to jump into that first shocking scene. It, mm-hmm. You know, everything's kind of fine and dandy until it's time to have that feast and they're celebrating that older man and older woman. And the newcomers clearly don't really understand why. Although, and I'm just going to keep calling him Chidi, I'm sorry. But Chidi totally knows why. And he still does not seem shocked about it, which kind of bugged me. I was like, you know what this is. And he was mm-hmm. watching it. And I guess he just found it also fascinating. But yeah, I feel like that was kind of the next big thing to happen was you find out that those elders were going to be sacrificing themselves to kick off kind of that, I think it was 9-day festival. And this was the first big feast to kind of honor them. And this was definitely my least favorite scene, just because I've mentioned this before, I don't love a ton of gore. And this was hands down the goriest part of this movie. I was so pissed at the director because even after it's over, they still managed to show you it really quickly, like a handful of times with no warning. Yeah. See, at least when like they were falling off the cliff, I was like, okay, shit's about to be really bad. I like closed my eyes a little bit. And then like they showed it a little bit. I was like, oh fuck, I saw it. And then I saw it again. I was like, damn it, I saw it. And then they just kept showing it for like 10 minutes randomly. They would just like, the scene would cut really quickly and show their mashed in faces. Ugh. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was one of the interesting scenes because everything looks so beautiful and calm when they get to the village. People are playing flutes and they're genuinely like warm and welcoming to them. So this was like, it was so crazy to just suddenly jump to this scene. Which I actually liked because what I thought it did was explain what their lore is. You know, the Horgas, they were basically saying that at a certain age, you're too old to really carry on. And by fighting against that, like trying to stay alive, trying to take medicine, do whatever it takes past the age of 72, you're really like disrespecting your spirit and you should just let the natural like life cycle take you and not try to persist. So they give their lives willingly, apparently. And so that's where this, the background on the scene comes from. And I thought it was so gruesome. Honestly, like I couldn't, like, it was hard to watch, but for sure, it had good meaning in the village.
Yeah, the old man that jumps definitely didn't watch the movie Frozen. He didn't learn don't go feet first, because when he went feet first and shattered his legs and be like, you're not gonna die from that, you're just gonna be in anguish, you know. And then they had to come out with like a mallet and like crush his head like four times just to make sure he's dead.
That was the thing. Like right after that, then his friend goes, oh, I'm sorry, like I didn't warn you, give you guys good enough notice. And I was like, bro, you didn't think to tell them that two people would be jumping off a cliff and that they would smash their heads in with a mallet if they didn't survive.
But think about it. They were all anthro majors, and like Chidi, who seemed like the straight A student, once he was explained, sorry, Rob, I'm going to keep calling him Chidi. That's just what's going to happen.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. he was like, well, this is going to be the next ritual. Chidi was like, oh shit. But no one else. Now, of course, Danny is not an anthro major, so she's like, oh, I don't know. But you think that the rest of them would know what that meant.
I don't think so, because the one dumb kid that pisses on a tree is just a fuck up. And then Christian seems like he's a slacker, where he wanted to just, the only reason he wanted to do this thesis because like it would be less work. And he knew that he knew he could make Chidi do all the work for him. So like, I don't think saying that these other guys, even though this is their major, I don't think they know shit though. So I think it is only Chidi. Yeah. That's it.
Well, they clearly don't know shit, but what I'm thinking is coming from Pele or whatever his name is maybe he kind of assumes they know what they're getting themselves into.
No, mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with like, this is their culture and, you know, like Greg explained, like this is the way it works. I was kind of okay with it. I honestly thought they were overreacting. I thought because there's actually two other people in this movie. There's a couple, this guy and this girl that were brought by another, you know, host or whatever you want to call it. And they freaked the shit. They're screaming and yelling, and they're, you know, yelling at the man after they saw the woman jump, saying like, hey, don't jump, you know, don't do it, don't do it. I thought that was overreacting. I mean, it's crazy. You weren't expecting to see people die that day. But it's at their own will. Nobody is forcing them to do this. This is their culture. I didn't see the huge deal with it. I thought it was a lot of overreaction, to be honest with you.
I mean, I don't know how I would have reacted in the moment, because I've never seen anything that gruesome in my life. I've seen some bad things, but I've never seen anything that gruesome. I think that I probably would have kept my hysteria in check though, for sure. Like I would have not wanted other people to see me freaking out, because if they're capable of doing this, what else are they capable of doing? I need to be chill about it. But I also don't think they overreacted. That, I mean, it was disgusting.
Just like you're talking about, Laura, just the statement you just made of saying, you know, if this is what they're capable of, what are you really saying though? They're capable of what? Of having, you know, this is the way they live their life. You know, like there's the one statement where they make in there about, you know, being 72 and, you know, they don't go on, so they could pretty much kill themselves. And the one guy, I don't know if it was Christian or Chidi, that said they would look at us and say we in America would put him into a retirement home, and that's abuse.
Yeah. You know,
and just like that. That's why.
That was a good line. That was a really good line.
So that's why I kind of, you know, I don't, there's a lot of this movie that I think it's messed up what they're doing, but that's their culture. That's what they believe. And that's their choice to make. Not until the very end where I'm like, whoa, this has just went a little too far now. But a lot of it in here, I'm not against it.
I mean, sure, they were old. That's a cultural thing. However, sacrificing 9 people, only a handful of them who actually volunteered to be sacrificed, bringing people under, like having no idea they were about to be sacrificed, that's not okay in any culture. So
I can, I mean, we're not there yet. We're not there to that part yet, but I can almost like defend most of those murders.
Oh my God. What the fuck? Dude, I know I'm jumping ahead, but I'm starting to think Rob just wants to get to the sex scene. So he's okay with everything else he has to do to get to that fucking sex scene.
I feel like for every 5 minutes that we don't get to it, Rob, you have to take off an article of clothing.
And... Oh, it's like that. It's a Swedish striptease.
Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ. But also just to say again, after what you're saying, like, but you also can't forget that they were planning on outsiders coming in and being sacrificed against their will. So like, fuck, like I wouldn't have gone if I knew that that was going to happen. Like
no, legit, they're evil. Yeah, sure.
I mean, what, everyone's forgetting this. So you're just going to go and be like, you have such wonderful history and rituals. And then they're like, oh, by the way, you're one of four people that were brought here. You're dying. And you're just going to be like, okay, yeah, that's your culture. Sure.
This is an interesting thing. It's like, and we've actually gone over this when we, what, that movie where those kids broke into that old guy's house, whatever that, what was that called?
Don't Breathe.
Yeah. Where you were trying to, we were all trying to justify like, oh, who should have died? Who was I okay with dying? Mm. The funny thing is like, we're never really okay with these people getting murdered horrifically. That's never a thing that we like. But like, to Rob's point, when you see these people eat it, it's not like you think they deserve it or that they asked for it, but it's almost like you're observing a chain of events where people make bad decisions or make selfish decisions, where they lean themselves into a territory where it's not good. And you have a chance of being the target of attack or death. So it's like, not that you want them to be there, but when it happens and if it happens, you kind of be like, yeah, well, you know, you did this, this and that. Not like you were asking for it, but you were heading that direction. And I feel like we can process that easier and it makes more sense. So that's where I kind of align with Rob. It's like, yeah, I don't condone their crazy rituals and their intent to kill these people, but like they were respectful, wound up somehow being spared. Who knows?
No, but that's my thing with all this though, is like, do we know for a fact that that was their intent this whole time, was to kill all these people that they brought? Or was all the people that they killed, you know, definitely, like I said, the douchebag Mark guy, he deserved it. He pissed on the tree, the sacred tree. He deserved it. You know, Chidi broke in and tried to steal pictures of their holy book. He fucking deserved it. You know, I'm not saying they should have killed him, but I mean, there's cause there. The only people I think I would say maybe not would be that other couple, because they really didn't seem to do anything disrespectful other than want to leave.
Which I think is kind of disrespectful in its own. They wanted to leave that ritual at the cliff, right? Remember, they were making the big fuss.
Yeah, but I don't think they didn't break any rules.
Okay, you guys, there were six outsiders brought to this festival. Six. Mm-hmm. They needed four, potentially five. Let's say six of us go. And we all of a sudden quickly learn what's going on. Do you think that your nice behavior is going to get you off the hook here? We could all act super nice and like we're down with it. But you know what? The odds are not in our favor here.
This isn't Hunger Games, Laura. This isn't Hunger Games. I mean, my thing was, say everybody was respectful and nobody broke any rules, then maybe it was like, we need four more volunteers, and then people would volunteer.
They said it needed to be outsiders. And they kept thanking them for bringing the outsiders there.
So as far as like, because it's what, was it nine to sacrifice at the end or seven? I forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it was, nine. And there's somewhere in this movie where they literally state four of the nine need to be from outside of their.
Yes.
Really? I don't remember that.
Yes.
Okay, then I take all my stuff back. Okay.
Thank you! Yes!
But that was part of the horror, is like trying to figure out whether what was happening was... This honestly reminded me of, again, so many of the movies that you watch are so related. Like The Invitation, where you're trying to figure out what is the controlling factor. In this movie, it was like, okay, well, what's causing all these horrific things to happen? Is it that, you know, these outsiders are breaking the code of this culture and it's making them targets, or was the whole thing premeditated the whole time? It was destined that four would be sacrificed. And I think it's more like what you said, Laura. I think that's just their every 90 years, they decide that this a sacrifice needs to be made to the god of nature or the sun god or whatever as a gift to say thank you for what you are providing us. So that was just part of the lore. I think if you had the most pious, respectful guy in this movie, they would find a reason to sacrifice him.
Maybe, but I'm not going to find out. I'm not putting myself in that situation. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, let's get back into the actual movie a bit here. You know, we went on a tirade there of did they or didn't they deserve any of this stuff? Let's talk a little bit about the actual setting, more or less. You know, where they actually made them sleep was a, you know, like a barnyard churchy area where they said that you stay in there until you're 36, was it? This is where you sleep, yeah. And you stay until you're like 36 years old. They explained their way of numbering and this and that, and the way that they do their life is based on seasons. There's four seasons, so you have like four stages in your life. And so, and just the whole area that you're pretty much in most of the time is just littered with art of the past, art of their history. And one thing I noted when I first saw it was my first thought was it was all more like hypnosis or subliminal messages and imagery, where if you're in this area, this room for so much of your life that you are from when you were born, you are in there to where it's brainwashing you to be like, this is the way we do things. This is how we live. This is the norm. That was my first thought before I really researched anything further, because I thought it was just interesting that the place that you're in for 36 years of your life, it's just painted everywhere, these horrific events, or this is how we do things. It wasn't until later on that I did a little more research and figured out that that's more of the way that they just document their history, you know, that that's how that they live their life, you know. So I don't know if it's brainwashing or not, but I thought it was definitely interesting and visually crazy for some of the imagery.
I thought it could be, Rob, because it seemed to me what was so crazy was that hardly anybody talked in the village, but yet they were all somehow in unison. Everybody moved the same way. Everybody was in harmony. And it's like, how do you get people, a large community of people, to do that without brainwashing them somehow? So I actually hadn't thought of that, your theory about that. And I would think that that's a big part of it. You open your eyes and the ceiling that you're looking at has like the story of your next 20 years, and you wake up to that every day. You know, that might really like affect you and like make you a conformist in that type of setting. So interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, pretty much after, you know, that little bit, like I said, that one couple, they're gone. They disappeared. Pretty much all the villagers are pretty much telling, you know, the main four people here that they left, you know, they went home and they're fine now. And so it's just down to the main core of people now. You have the Mark kid who, you know, some girl like, you know, looked at him different. So he wants to bang her. So he's all ready to go for that. He pissed on the tree, pissed off everybody. So he's definitely the first one to go. So one of the girls, the girl he was looking at, you know, says like, hey, come with me. And then you don't see him again. You don't see him again after that, you know?
Oh, well, you do. You see him again.
Is it technically? Yeah. Yeah. So you technically do see him again. Cause in the next one that gets killed here is Chidi. Chidi, of course, like we said, sneaks out when he wants to take pictures of the book, the holy book. And they say, no, of course you can't do that. So he sneaks out and he starts taking pictures, and then the door opens behind him and there's somebody standing there, and shadowy wise, it looks like Mark, and he says, Mark, and then he gets hit in the head with a giant mallet. And then you see who it is, and I'm pretty sure it's the Oracle kid, right?
Yeah, I think so.
But he's wearing Mark's skinned face on like a mask, which was pretty fucking crazy. So you technically do see Mark again. You do see him one more time. and then you're really just down to Christian and Danny. They're the only two left. And, you know, they don't seem very much like, where did everybody go? I don't know how much time is in between when Mark goes disappearing and then Chidi. I feel like that's almost back to back.
Well, and remember, every time they're drinking a drink with every meal, it's it's drugged.
That's true.
It's either alcohol or it's got some like psychedelic element to it. So
that's true. Yeah. Ever since they showed up, they're on something the whole time.
Yeah.
They're at this place. So, mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much from there, you're to, like I said, it's just Christian and Danny now. Christian has a girl that's taken a liking to him. she first she tried to put a little some type of bone or stick, a love bone, in under his bed or something like that to cast a spell on him. That was the first thing she did, you know. Then next thing she did was make him a pie, you know, with just, you know, little extra inside for him, you know, a little extra something.
Are you gonna say it? What was it? What was it, Rob?
It was a pube. It was a pube. You know, she cut off some of her pubes and put it in the pie. You know, and that supposedly is like makes him fall in love with her.
Oh my god! And then did you guys catch that his drink was a shade redder than everyone else's?
Oh, I didn't. Was that the blood then? That was like,
yeah.
That was like vagina blood. Oh, nasty.
Yeah. We'll call it vagina blood. That's fine. On this podcast with two men, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, so Christian's been chosen to, you know, be with this woman. You know, she had her, whatever you want to call it. This woman is, you know, is ready to have a child. You know, her body is
She's
ready.
She's of age.
I don't even know what to. I was trying to be respectful, Laura. Yeah, I guess it came off weirder than I interpreted, but okay. All right, yeah. Yes, that's Christian's story. Then you have Danny going with the whole dance. Part of me was thinking, like, was she always supposed to win? Like, were people like falling on purpose? You know, I was wondering.
I don't know about that. This just goes back to my whole thing. Like, there was some kind of element of this movie where she was just always meant to be there, and she was always meant to win that competition and like just be there, you know, and be part of them.
Yeah, you definitely have a complete contrast from Christian's experience and Danny's experience. Danny's experience is welcoming and joyful and looks like she's having a good time, even though she's, you know, drugged out. Seems like she's having a good time and she's the winner and seems like she's happy and excited.
It's the first time she's happy in the whole movie where she's actually laughing and enjoying herself.
And you have fucking Christian over there who's just like, keeps thinking like, I guess I'm just going to have sex with this girl. You know, like, that's cool. So who wants to describe the sex scene? Who wants to, I've talking enough here. Who wants to talk about this scene?
I'll do it.
All right. Great. I'll chime in when I can. Okay. Right.
Christian is completely drugged out. And at this point he doesn't give a fuck. And someone told him to stick his dick somewhere. So he was like, all right, here we go. So they put him in a nice robe and he walks in, and what he sees is not just the woman that he was planning on mating with. No, it's not just her lying there already naked, legs spread, ready to go, but a good, 15 women of all, mostly, you know, elders, they're all of age. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there was definitely some elders. And they're all completely naked and they're chanting. And already I'm thinking, how is this guy, he's going to go perform and like cheat on his girl.
They gave him the Viagra mist.
Is that what that mist was?
Yeah. Because he said, the guy said something about like, I don't forget the word he used. Like
fertility or something.
So yeah, some fertility, or this will make you stronger. Literally, like, this will give you a boner. You know, that's pretty much what he should have said.
But even still, as a man, we're about to go complete the act and then walked in and there were 20 additional people, half of who were like in their 70s and 80s and everyone's naked and chanting. Could you do that?
No comment.
Don't forget, Greg's 12 feet deep, so Greg might be okay.
He can stand way back and just be like, I just don't want to get near them.
He's like, I'm good. I got it from here, you know.
Yeah, so anyway, obviously he approaches this girl, they start to have intercourse, and at first it's just chanting. It's like musical. It's very strange. But as things really get going, their chant actually turns into mimicking the woman and like the groans and the, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end, I don't know if it's because he's having trouble or if because they just really want to make sure that he shoves a baby in there, because one of the oldest women in the lineup then walks behind him and puts her hands on his butt and starts thrusting him into her even harder. Mm-hmm. So this is really the craziest sex scene I have ever seen in any movie ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But moving on from this, but also related, is we haven't really talked about how this community, the breathing that they do and the mimicking. So they are very, and this is something that really got like under my skin in this movie, was just that all of Danny's grief was very visceral. Again, like her acting was just so amazing. But the fact that this community has these practices where they practice their deep breathing, because when the time comes, when someone in their village is experiencing anything, whether it's pain from death or pleasure from intercourse or whatever it is, they all kind of join in and make it their own grief or pleasure. And that's like what all that deep breathing is. It's them, you know, really getting into that. And it's like every time that happened, which was so often, it was just something I'd never seen before. Mm. And I mean, obviously in the sex scene, by then it was like, oh, okay. But at the same time, Danny, she has a feeling something's going on. And of course, she very briefly goes and looks where this sex scene is happening and sees that her boyfriend is in this ritual and cheating on her and, you know, probably impregnating another girl. And up until then, she's pretty much held her grief in pretty well. I mean, she's had some breakdowns, but you can see she's really keeping it inside. She goes with this group of women and she's having like a panic attack. And at first they're trying to soothe her, and it's not working. And as soon as Danny just gives in to that raw grief and just lets it go, they just start making the same sounds as her. And oh my God, I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. It's mm-hmm. like those scenes are what, oh, I don't know.
Is that like your visual disease you have? Like it bothered you?
No, just it, I don't know.
It's just like uncomfortable. It's just uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. It's very uncomfortable. The first time
you saw her cry like that was when her parents died, right?
Yeah.
And it was so horrifying to me because those wails that she was giving in that first scene where she was like sobbing, like just yelling uncontrollably. And you never thought somebody felt so alone. This was the total opposite, you know? And it's like, and I think she took to that, like, I think probably for the first time, maybe in her life, she actually felt like she didn't have to take all the burden of that pain on herself. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that was probably what was so appealing to her with this community. It was like, it can do multiple things. Like, you know, it can like diffuse a lot of the pain that you have. And she's just used to taking it on. Obviously she can't rely on Christian to like be there for her, to like comfort her. So it was like crazy. So that, yeah, this scene was definitely like the climax of the movie, you know, no pun intended, like of the movie where it came to a head, you know, and it was just crazy to see. Like, but that's how I took it. It was like she literally felt like for the first time she didn't have to like hold it all in.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, these people are definitely the best Simon Says players in the world. They they know how to do it, like copy everything, you know.
Hey, you know what? I've told you guys that I have this like sort of this condition. What is the name of it? It's called called pareidolia, where you like see faces and you see like human shapes in inanimate things. I had an instance in this movie of that, and I literally thought like the home or the structure where they had like that sex ritual. I don't know. Did you guys notice that like the shape of that structure literally looks like one large house, like doggy styling, like a smaller house?
Yes.
What?
I was like, why is this house crooked and falling and what is happening?
What?
I had to think like it literally looks like it's doing this other smaller house. And I thought that, like, I don't know. Thank you for like recognizing that too. It just seemed like what a ideal place for a sex ritual.
Oh my goodness! Wow, that's a great contractor. Wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice that at all. That's insane. Shit.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Wow. That's pretty cool. I got to watch this movie again. Wow.
Oh, check it out. Check it out. Check it out. Look, here's the Rob. Tell me that, can you see that?
Yeah. Any of them? The top of the photo.
Oh, okay. Now I see. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty dirty.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Why is that on your phone, Greg?
Well, because I want to show you guys.
Okay. Uh-huh. Right, Greg. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nasty, Greg. From this point, we're really to the end of this movie. It's the reveal of just all the craziness that has been going on. We talked about, you know, a lot of the people didn't die on camera. This is where you're kind of revealing these people's deaths now. You know, Christian, of course, you know, he finishes his business. He runs out of the doggy style house and he running around with his wiener flopping around. And Laura. It's Laura's.
Actually, I have another fun fact.
Oh, about his wiener?
About his wiener.
Wow, yeah, interesting. About his wiener.
What is it?
No, the as much as I didn't love his character by any means in this movie, I guess the actor did not have to be naked. He mm-hmm. was given a choice, and he made it a point, like, women are naked all the time in film. Like, I'm going to get naked in this movie.
Oh, wow.
Well, that was his reason he didn't. He had no ulterior motives.
Yeah, he just thought that it made sense.
Wow, what a great actor. Mm-hmm.
Hey, more wieners on film, the better. I'm just kidding.
there's the end sound bite. Okay, we got it. All right. It's an obvious one. That might be the end soundbite from now on until we're done with the podcast forever. That's the new end soundbite forever now. We don't even need
to just replace the grinding gears soundbite with that.
Oh, that's true. I like it. I like it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. More wieners, the better with Laura. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, so when Christian's running around, he stumbles into a chicken coop. And that's where you reveal the couple that was brought there. The guy is like filleted open from the back. This is a weird scene where I wanted to ask you guys, like, what the fuck was going on?
I wrote some notes on this, and then I easily saw it online. So I'm sure you guys did too. Hopefully I'm not stealing your segment right now, Greg. But did you guys notice how the four outsiders died minus one of them, minus the face guy, Mark, mm-hmm. Were all of the like nature's elements.
What?
So Chidi was found in the dirt,
oh,
right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's earth. And then you have, what was the guy's name?
The couple guy? I don't know his name.
Mm-hmm. Simon and Connie.
Simon. So Simon's like flying in the air. So there's the air element. When Connie's body gets wheelbarrowed out, she's been drowned. So that's Whoa. Water.
Oh, that's what it was? Oh.
And then Christian, without giving it away, mm-hmm. fire. So you've got all four like nature elements on how they died.
Dang. They got killed by Captain Planet. What about love? Did anyone get killed with love? Danny.
Oh, Danny, I guess. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She didn't get killed with love, but definitely love. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's fucking crazy. I didn't. That explains, I guess, why they like flayed him open and made it look like he has wings.
And then they add the flowers for his eyes.
Yeah.
It's like, mm-hmm. oh my God, what are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much, yeah, from there, like I said, yeah, you're getting the reveal of everything right now. Christian gets caught in the chicken coop. Somebody, you know, sprays some fucking more drug dust in his face. that pretty much paralyzes him. He can't speak. Yeah. He can't move, but he's still awake, which is honestly one of my worst fears of being like motionless and you can't do anything, but you're like, you're awake, whether you're like, you had to be in surgery or something like that. And you hear the stories about people that wake up on the tables, but they can't do anything or scream. That's fucking crazy. So yeah, so pretty much Christian is immobile, but he's still aware of everything. Danny, like I said, already saw what he was doing. So she's like, fuck this guy. She's the queen now, pretty much the queen. They have the new dinner tables. She's at the head of the table. So they do their last little thing, and then they get into the end of the movie where they talk about, you know, 9 sacrifices, and we have 2 volunteers, and we have, you know, they do, I think they did a random drawing for a couple people, right? They had like a little like lottery style thing.
Well, they had 2 volunteers, right? Because they have 6 so far. They have the 2 elders, they have the 4 outsiders who are already dead, and then mm-hmm. they get 2 volunteers, and then that leaves 1 more. Mm-hmm. And it's a choice between a lottery, someone in the village that comes up on the lottery, or there's this other outsider, there's Christian, and the May Queen gets to decide.
Oh, and, that's right. I forgot about that. It's her fucking choice.
We don't see her make the choice, but then we later see Christian, you know, well, yeah.
Being sewn into a bear, not a costume, but a physical. Earlier in the movie, they showed a bear in a cage, and somebody is like, "What's a bear for?" And they're just like, "I don't even know if they even say anything about it." But yeah, at the end of this movie, they're you know, cutting the bear open, taking out the entrails. They're prepping the bear to put Christian inside, which is fucking crazy. Yeah, so they put Christian in the bear suit. There's no butt flap, so it's just solid, you know?
Well, as far as you know.
I guess as far as I know, that's true. They never showed the back. That's true, Greg. Yeah, there probably is a butt flap. You're right. Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, and then they put the 9 people into the, whatever you want to call it. I don't know if they had a special name for that certain house. And then they pretty much just light it on fire. They lit it on fire. It starts going up in a blaze. And yeah, pretty much Danny is just watching, you know, she's just watching this thing go up in flames. You know, they definitely show the inside. They show all the other decomposed bodies burning. And then it kind of goes like pans away beyond that. And you kind of just see the bear start going up in flames. And like I said, it's just so fucked up. Like Christian was definitely not a good guy in this movie, but man, what a fucking way to go. Like thinking like you can't scream, you can't move, and you're burning alive. Like that's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you kind of go to, you know, they pan onto Danny's face, definitely a close up of her face. You're pretty much to the end of this movie now. And she's looking partially, I wouldn't say concerned, but definitely emotion. And then she starts to smile, and then it cuts to black, and I'm just like, what the fuck, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, it's clear shit. that's her home now. That's her family. She's one of them. I mean, these people, doesn't matter what they believe and what they've done and if she believed in that prior to this moment, but they took her in and they shared her grief with her and they kept her safe. And yeah, she was just, like I said, meant to be there, I think.
Yeah. It was almost like Christian was her last remaining connection to the outside world. And once mm-hmm. he goes up in flames, she's like, I have nothing else to be there for. So this, I'm here now. I'm fully here. I have nothing else left, which is fucking insane. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, what a fucking journey. Jesus Christ, man.
You could tell at the end, she even had one last attempt. Like, it seemed like the whole movie, she, anytime she was upset, she would take it upon herself and not let anybody bear that pain. And then in that moment, you see her, she's just blanketed with this giant, you know, whatever it is, like covered in flowers. You can't even see her. And she's crying because she, you know, she just sent her boyfriend to her death. But then she looks back and she sees the community again, like writhing in pain as if they're taking on that pain. And then I think that was probably the last time where she stopped faking it. It was like, I don't need to do this by myself. Like I'm like being held, you know, as like that guy said, I'm being held by these people and I don't, they can, you know, we're here for each other. And like, that's where, again, like that smile came in. It was like, oh man, I think she finally realized that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot too, that before that even happens, Pele gets like a promotion and he's like a fucking, I don't know what he is, some type of elder or something, because he brought all these people here.
Yeah, well, not only did he bring in half of the sacrifices, more than half, but he brought in Danny, who is like their new May Queen and who is now one of them, you know, like mm-hmm. he recognized that. So that's probably rare, I think.
Yeah. Do you, Laura, do you have anything for your disease you have?
No.
I like calling it a disease. It's funny. No, nothing. Okay.
I feel bad. I haven't had any content for you guys in a while, but
no, dang.
You know, it's just fuck. But when I see something, you'll know.
Yeah, like the like wieners. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That doesn't bother me so much.
No, mm-hmm. It's the anti of your disease. You're like, okay. Greg, do you want to do a diggings now, or do you want to go into some theories about the end of this movie? Or we're double teaming this, right?
Ooh. Yeah, double teaming. Leave that in.
Oh, dang. Wait. Greg, am I pushing your butt or are you pushing my butt? Which one's happening?
It's a simultaneous mutual push is what it is.
Wait, we're both pushing our butts at the same time?
Oh, my God.
Laura's about to be done right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Let's wow. get our simultaneous drop here, Greg. All right, ready? Okay. All right, I guess I'm digging up Greg. I'm digging him up here. Opening the coffin.
Can I talk about?
Okay, I'm jumping in the coffin with him. We're both in the coffin now. We're nude. Okay, all right. Laura, like, every time she goes to drink, I have to, like, make a joke, so it's even better. Okay, Greg, you want to start?
Is the coffin in the shape of that house, too?
Yeah, yeah. I brought a tiny coffin with me, and then I put it next to your coffin. Yeah. Okay. All right. Do you want to start, Greg, or do you want me to finish? What do you want?
You guys, oh shit.
So I was interested in how you guys were like kind of talking on different sides of, is it okay just because, you know, moral relativism, that's their culture. That's what they do. What side are you on? And something that I just thought about since you mentioned that was something that I was so interested in this movie, but I really couldn't get a handle on because there's just so much shit happening. And it's this idea of cults. And I actually was thinking about that when we saw The Invitation, but I didn't want to get into it too much, nor do I want to now, but the idea of cults, I remember listening to this podcast where this lady was sort of, they were trying to indoctrinate her into the cult, and she was very analytical about how they were doing it, and she resisted. And one thing that she mentioned about how, you know, cults work, and I don't know if you would call the Horgas a cult or not, but, you know, it's the way that they bring people in. And I feel like as a viewer, we're almost being sold into this cult too. Like you were mentioning, Rob, like you were not fully considering perhaps the fact that, okay, well, they literally are just luring people in to murder them. Mm-hmm. It was almost like, well, this is what their customs are. You don't have to be here if you don't want to. And I thought, man, it's so brilliant because that's exactly what cults do, you know? And one thing that this lady was saying was that you go there and their immediate goal is to take down your defenses. So they will confuse you, put you under anxiety. They'll actually shower you with so much love, you know, that you have no choice after such a long period of time. You go to these different retreats or whatever, that you have no choice but to be like, you know what, I give in, I surrender. And I feel like this movie did a lot of that through normalization. And the whole movie takes place in the daylight, you know, and it just made me think of, there's this huge theme of like, there's the surface, you know, which looks clean, it looks spotless, the mirror in the beginning of the movie, or just the whole movie being taking place in this beautiful meadow in the daytime with absolutely peaceful music. You know, and to me, I had notes saying like, how dare they play this music while this thing's burning down? And because it was so calming to me, and you're watching this, it made me think of Danny and Christian's relationship, you know, and like the deterioration of that. They were clearly trying to stay together to hold up appearances. She was very like dependent on him, and he kept trying to be like the nice guy and string her along, you know, kind of a noble cause, I guess, right? Like, I can't be the guy that dumps his girl after her parents are murdered by her sister, you know, but at some point he was never really straightforward with her. So they developed this relationship that was very much like this village. It was like, it looks so kind and neat on the outside, but really none of that shit matters, because what really matters is like the darkness that's going on underneath. And I thought, my God, it like totally portrays what's going on in this movie, how it's so bright. And yet you have these like equal themes going on. Like, I feel like by the end of the movie, did Danny even learn anything? Did she learn to take that pain and let it go? I mean, and I don't know. I mean, I don't even know if she's in a better place than she was before. What do you guys think?
I mean, for me, to be honest with you, like, I think she, she had something horrific happen to her, and, you know, not really happen to her, but experienced through the loss of her family. And I think she is not even through the grieving process yet when any of this is happening. So I think the end of this movie is just her finding another way to, very similar to The Invitation with the mother who just wanted to forget everything and not even deal with her emotions and be like, I'm just going to ignore it. And I think that's what happened at the end of this movie. I don't know. What do you think, Laura?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely made it clear in this movie that she was holding back her grief on behalf of Christian. She was already scared that he was going to break up with her, which he was. And I mean, even in that initial argument they had, like, she had a right to be like, what the fuck? You didn't tell me about this. And then he kind of gets defensive and she's like, oh, no, no, I'm just asking. Like, don't worry about it. So she's really been holding all this back. And with this community, like we've already talked about, she is able to fully just like be in her grief and then be met with people who are experiencing it with her. And I don't know about you guys. I mean, I've dealt with grief, and don't get me wrong, it's not a quick thing. It lasts for years. It comes randomly. But the best advice you can get is to just be in your grief and not hold it back. Because if you're just able to like be in it and not hold it back, honestly, it's very freeing, quicker, right? Like, you get to a spot where you can actually take a deep breath and be like, okay, I feel a little bit better. And so I think that's what she's feeling in this moment. So yes, will she feel grief for the rest of her life? Absolutely. But will this community be there supporting her and allowing her to feel that and just completely let it happen with no one holding her back? I think that they will. And that might keep her there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything else, Greg, or can I get into my, Graves, sorry. Are you done, Graves?
Basically, he wants to know if you're done so that he can now be top.
Can I, you know, now that you finish, can I finish?
Oh my.
Laura.
Why are you guys doing this to me tonight? Oh my God.
My little like segment I wanted to talk about. So I looked up a couple of theories for this movie. So two of the ones they're definitely intertwined is about Pele himself. And so one of the main theories is that Pele is the Oracle and he planned this whole thing. So the main purpose for this theory goes back to, one, when she first met him, he was sketching something in his little notebook. And I guess what he was sketching, it's a quick frame, they show it, is all of them sitting at one of the big dinner tables at the, whatever it's called, over in their commune, you know, like the whole scene where they're all sitting at the table. Wow. Sketching that. Wow. And that's one thing they talk about in the movie is that the oracles can kind of see the future.
Yeah.
They can kind of see things. And the other thing that kind of puts credence to this theory is when he is, gets his upgrade, gets his crown of flowers from bringing in all these people that they kill, I guess one of the elders says to him, you will now be recognized for your unclouded intuition, which is something that they mention when they talk about the oracles early on, saying that they are meant to be inbred because they have unclouded intuition, which is that's a crazy coincidence that they're using the same terminology in that instance for him. So that's kind of the theory, is that he's actually an oracle and he kind of orchestrated this whole thing because he saw it in the future that I need to bring Danny here because she's going to be our May Queen and she's going to be, you know, the future for us.
Wow.
Which leads into another even more fucked up theory that Pele is actually the one that killed her family.
Oh,
no.
You don't think so, Laura? You don't think so?
I mean, her sister was bipolar, and she mentions to Christian that she's been getting messages like this for forever, right? He's like, oh, your sister always says this. I don't know. It's a
fucked up theory. I definitely think the one about him being an oracle and seeing this and planning it, I definitely could possibly see that being true. The one about killing the family, like you said, Laura, I don't know if it's went that far. But he, if he's an oracle, he would have saw that her family's going to die. She's going to be grieving, you know, she's going to need family. And this is what I'm going to plan to get her to come with us. Because like I said, that one scene where he's so interested in her coming, when you think about that perspective, that he already knows what's going to happen, it puts a lot more, that scene is just seems so different when he's just like, I think you really need to come. You really should come. You know, we have a great family. You could be one of us, you know?
Yeah, this is some conspiracy theory shit right now. This is crazy.
Yeah, you know, good job, Graves. I think we did a good job. You know, we got in there really deep. Good job. Good job. So I'm gonna put my clothes back on and get out of the casket, okay? All right. So I'll see you later, Graves. All right. Have a good one.
Okay.
Can I talk about
Greg's back, you know. All right, so let's get to the Rotten Tomatoes scores for this movie, because these are insane Rotten Tomatoes scores. The audience score is 63%, and the critic score is 83%, which, I mean, that's just seems crazy that they're so different from each other, you know?
I mean, I'm not that surprised. I know we keep saying that usually audience is higher than critic, but I think we've learned, you know, with the, 20 movies we've watched thus far out of the thousands and thousands and thousands of horror movies, that the critic score always seems to be higher if it's like a good horror film. Whereas the audience is just, there's something to complain about. And I can always understand the thing that I feel like they're most complaining about. And I think with this one, I think a lot of people saw it as the director just throwing in whatever fucked up thing he could think of for just shock and like not having a lot of substance. So I'm not that surprised.
Yeah, I think most of the reviews I looked at, and I know Laura put a couple on the docket here, literally say that a lot of the negative ones I looked up pretty much just said, you know, this movie is just shock value. It's just shitty imagery. It's just all about mercy killings. And anybody that gave it a negative rating or said they didn't like it is because of that.
Yeah.
Very similar to like we talked about with Funny Games, where, you know, it's such like a fucked up movie, and it's meant to cause you feelings, I think, that aren't normal feelings you have. And just that some people either will take that and still judge a movie based on the movie itself, and other people will just say, you know, fuck it, like, I don't like it. I don't like the way this made me feel. I don't like the things it's making me think about, and I don't like it. You know, but I definitely just thought it was something we have to at least talk about, you know, because that's the difference in score is so drastic.
That makes sense, because there's really nothing to be, this is one of those movies, nothing happy to be, you know, there's nothing to be happy about.
Yeah.
Right. But it depends on how you look, you know, how you look at the movie. Are you looking at it to be, you come up with an ending where you feel really great, where you feel redeemed, or are you able to just look at it like, well, what was this movie about? What did it, what were some of the deeper themes? And I can see both sides to it. Yeah. I mean, it's like when you get to the end, I don't know who anybody who's like getting off the couch, like, woo,
that was clapping. This is so clapping, great.
Like, you know, just like this was The Visit or something like that. Like, you know,
Can I read two reviews that are actually lean more towards positive that I want you guys to hear?
Mm-hmm.
So the first one is a critic review. It's Clarice Lowry of The Independent. And she says, it's strange and distressing at times, even a little punishing to the audience, which I agree with, but it's filled with ideas, images, and feelings that will stay with you long after the credits roll. And it's worth every second. So now I completely agree with all of that. You know, it is distressing. It is punishing to us. These images are going to stay with me, but is it worth every second? I don't know if I agree with that statement. Mm. And then the other one I want you guys to hear, and this is someone who gave it like a positive rating. I don't know if it was 5 out of 5 or what, but it's Lindsay Romaine from Nerdist. And she says, I've never seen such a wicked, accurate depiction of intoxicating mania. I adored it and I hate it. But she gave it a positive review. So it's kind of that, like what you guys are talking about. You love it, but you hate it. But can you come out of that and say, yeah, I hated it, but I'm going to give it a good review. It was worth it.
Yeah, I think for me, it's like two perspectives. It's like, if I'm looking at this, which, you know, like Greg talked about last episode a bit, the way that we are reviewing movies now, we're not just watching a movie and throwing it aside and being like, did I like that? Did I didn't like that? We are dissecting a movie, acting, imagery, and it makes you to go so deep into a movie that you're going to, of course, appreciate it more than you did before, or you're going to hate it more than you did before, you know? And I think a lot of the people that are just, you know, a lot of the percentages on here that are saying they don't like it is because it's just, they watched it. They're like, fuck it. I'm done. Bye. You know, we are going through every single like line of this movie and judging it based on each separate line. And it makes you find things you really, really like or find things you don't like a lot. You know, so I definitely would say, you know, this movie, I mean, let's just get into our ratings then a bit, because we're kind of going down that path anyway, you know. So let's do our 1 to 5 ratings, then we'll kind of get into that a bit. So for our 1 to 5 ratings, let's do how many pube pies.
What the fuck?
was that on your docket? Did you suggest that one, Laura?
No, I did not. I didn't even think that would be something
God. So, yeah, we won't even try to describe or how many pubes are in it. We don't want Laura to have to write that on docket. But we'll just do 1 to 5. You know, how many pube pies are you rating this movie? I'll start here. I was just talking about, I almost have like two separate ratings for this movie a bit. You know, like I talked about before, the directing is so good. The imagery is so good. As I watch this movie, just as like a movie, as like somebody who likes film, I mean, man, I got to rate this movie so high because it's just so well done. But then like you talk about, Laura, the subject matter, I don't really like. So that makes me have almost a different complete score for it, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you have to average them.
I know, that's kind of what I kind of like think in my head is, you know, as an overall experience of this movie, which is what our rating system should be on, I would definitely give this like a 4. I would say I give it a 4. I really, like I said, the directing was so good in this movie, the imagery, everything I really liked, you know, and the story I thought was well done. The acting was, you know, top notch. And, you know, the ending was like a great enough twist that I enjoyed it, you know. So I would say this is a really good movie, you know, crazy subject matter aside, I would give it a 4. It's a really good movie. It's fucked up, but it's really well done. And it's really good.
Wow.
What about you, Greg? How many pubes are in your pie?
I'm going with the same as you.
Wow. 4.
Yeah, this the whole movie, I thought, honestly, like maybe even more than 4, like maybe 4 and then a couple of extra little bites to the side, because a
couple pubes on the side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Couple, so like a 4.25, is that what you're telling me?
4.01.
Oh.
Oh, just one hair?
Yeah, one. Mm-hmm. Maybe a few extra. The acting, seriously, was the best. We already said this, that we'd seen in the movies that we've watched so far. I thought this movie was kind of, to me, was like a love child between like Hereditary and Witch, but not very extreme. Ooh. In terms of the ritual or in terms of the gore, but just one of the most unsettling. One of the scariest dreams that I ever had was like in this type of setting where everything's bright and it's so bright and everybody's smiling and happy that it's just too creepy to be true. And this movie touched on all those. The fact that everything is handmade. Honestly, like I have such an appreciation for this movie, even though I felt like shit at the end of it. So yeah, 4 for me.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. I'm glad Laura's going last, because our 4s, she seems really shocked. So I'm wondering what she's going to give now.
No, I'm not that far off, you guys. Mm-hmm. I think I am going to give this a 3.5 pube pies. Oh my God. Can't believe I have to say that.
I'm a oracle. This 20 episodes has all been to make Laura say pube pies.
Jesus Christ. You know, everything you guys said, acting, directing, the rich details, so good. Subject matter, obviously not so much. It didn't make me feel good. And I can't help, and this is probably my fault, but I can't help comparing it to Hereditary. And Hereditary is such a straightforward horror movie. And Hereditary is terrifying to the point where I don't ever want to watch it again if I don't have to. But I think that was a stronger film. I think it was cleaner. And so I can't, it's almost like this was a sequel, but even though it's not, and I can't help it. Just same guy came out a year later. You know, we do this with sequels. We do this with books from the same author. And so I think I lose some points there because of that reason. And plus it was slightly gorier than what I like. So that was really hard for me. So yeah, 3.5, not far off. I mean, it's still a great movie.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So that's it, you know, for our ratings. We got definitely high ratings for this movie. So it's definitely worth watching. Maybe, you know, maybe you want to read on Wikipedia the overall summary or something like that, or
yes,
you're not shocked at certain scenes if you don't like gore, you don't want to be shocked by certain things,
or just squeamish, or if things really stick with you and upset you. I honestly would recommend it. I recommend it. I still think even knowing what's going to happen, then seeing it, being prepared, and I still think you're going to appreciate it. So yeah, for sure. If you need to read it, I think all three of us agree. It's totally fine.
Yeah. So that's it for the movie review portion here. Let's get to our next week's movie reveal. So like we talked about last week, Laura took this movie pick from me so we can kind of line up, you know, midsummer events. So now it's my pick, and it just happens that my date that this podcast is going to be released on is what is it, Laura? It's like National Alien Day or something like that.
It's World UFO Day.
World UFO Day. So if anybody's been listening from the very beginning to our intro episode, the movie that screwed me up the most was 1993's Fire in the Sky. So I mean, how can I not pick it on, you know, World UFO Day? You know, so next week we're going to be watching Fire in the Sky. Don't know how I'm going to handle this, because this movie scarred me for a very long time when I was little. So that's the movie we're going to watch. I don't have a lot to say about it. I'm already sweaty and nervous about it.
So, how are you going to watch it? Have you already kind of planned, like, I need to watch it during the day, I need to watch it with my wife? Like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe I'll just take my phone and go out to the woods at night and watch it. You know, that'd probably be the best way.
I got to say, I'm sorry, but I am so excited to watch this movie.
Wow. Okay. All right. So that's it, everybody. So next week we're doing Fire in the Sky. Hopefully I'm here. Hopefully I don't just run away or stop the pod or get abducted, of course.
I like how get abducted is like the third on your list.
it's in that particular order.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if anybody wants to reach us, you know, kind of, you know, try to tell me to stay in there, wish me the best as I watch this movie, you can hit us up at email, conjecturingpod@gmail, Twitter, Instagram @conjecturingpod. Also, don't forget, subscribe, rate, review us wherever you get your podcast platform. So this week, this has been The Conjecturing. I've been Rob.
And Laura.
And Greg.
Yeah. Until next time, remember, horror is subjective. So conjecture away. See ya.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
There you go.